Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commissioners to order. It's Thursday, January 13th. And Ramona, will you please call the roll? Gentlemen, if you want to go ahead and turn on your little lights, that way she can hear you.
Commissioner Irving?
Present.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Christensen?
Here. Thank you. Okay, now if everybody would please stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, now is public comment period for items not on the agenda. So members of the public wishing to address the commission on matters other than scheduled items may do so at this time. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes. And I do have two speaker slips, Eric Greening followed by David Broadwater.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. Welcome to 3 new commissioners and welcome back to old commissioners. Old should be an honorary word. Anyway, first thing I'll tell you is that I've seen the information Mr. Broadwater is handing out, and I will only say that even though it's scary and indigestible, it is real. I served with him on a task force on land application of sewage sludge, and found his research integrity to be impeccable. I've never found a hole in his research, so please pay close attention to what he has to say. The other issue I wanted to raise is I think there is a need for one of the two of you who are carryovers from the previous commission to have a physical presence at the Board of Supervisors on February 1st when they make the findings on the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Study. In addition to the 10 numbered considerations that are conveyed from the Planning Commission, there's the additional statement that called a concern/reservation that it would be more effective to manage water resources in the North County as one basin as opposed to a separated Atascadero subbasin. As you know, during your hearing on the item, there was huge resistance from a staff member to your consideration of this. And when this same staff member reported your action to the RAC, it was not so much reported as resisted, continuing to be resisted, and it will probably continue to be resisted at the board level. So if you want to convey that concern, I think one of you needs to be there to participate in the hearing and answer questions and express your reasons for having that concern relative to the influence of the Atascadero subbasin on the basin as a whole. My understanding of the reasons for staff resistance, to me, they don't particularly hold water. One is that the people who've been studying it the longest don't seem to have the same level of concern as the people who haven't, but then the whole purpose of peer review is to have someone come in and take a fresh look. And if a concern is raised in peer review, it's a concern. The other one was supposedly that the county didn't have jurisdiction over much of that area. And number one, that would be irrelevant if it was true because you're making a physical finding about the physics, but I hope you can have somebody who's there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Broadwater, followed by Michael Wynn.
My name is David Broadwater. Happy New Year and happy new members. I'm with the Center for Sludge Information, been working on this issue for going on 13 years. I just wanted to draw your attention to the documents that I handed to you that I can send you electronically later on so you'll have them in PDF format. The first one is a two-sheet handout on what's in sewage sludge. The reason I'm bringing this to you is it will come across your desks as soon as the county has the money. Up to maybe $250,000 for an environmental impact on an ordinance that the Environmental Health Division of the Public Health Department will produce permitting the sewage sludge land application. So this is important information for you to have when the subject comes up. regarding what the material is. The second document here is just a one-page sheet, which gives the 15 directions from the Board of Supervisors and the Sewage Sludge Land Application Task Force, upon which I served, that outline the elements that should be included in the structure of a permissive ordinance, only two of which are included in the proposed ordinance. The third document here is a letter written about 10 years ago regarding the statewide regulations that were proposed at that time and that the county ordinance would be following. It's a joint letter from the Western Growers Association, the Sierra Club, California Citrus Mutual, Grape and Tree Fruit League, and a number of other environmental organizations and agricultural organizations in strong opposition to the standards and limits that are included in the statewide regulations. And the third one is excerpts from the comments from the California Farm Bureau Federation and the Delta Water Association on the same topic, showing their reasons for opposition to the standards as they exist in the statewide regulations. So, as I said, this will be coming across your desks sometime when the budget gets to the point to where we can handle the expense of an EIR. And I encourage every member here to have a sludge folder to be able to pull out and refer to when the time comes, and to at least insert these documents into that folder and take a look at them, refer to them, familiarize yourself with the topic and the positions of people from across the spectrum, from environmental organizations to agricultural organizations as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bradwater. Mr. Wynn?
Good morning, Chairman Christensen and commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm here in a dual function. I do represent the Napomo Community Services District, and I'm the chairman of the Water Resource Advisory Committee for this county. So in both of those roles, I welcome you, especially the new ones who are here, and the fairly new ones who have survived all the changes and are back again. Dan and I work together at the RAC, and it's good to see all of you here today. I just wanted to tell you that I will be appearing before you from time to time. When I'm not in your meetings, it means there's nothing about Napomo, and there's no precedent for anything elsewhere that could be applied to Napomo, and there's nothing about water. Then I won't be here. But otherwise, I will be here on your Thursday meetings, and I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
In other words, you're going to be here every time.
I think so.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Okay, that's all the speaker slips I have for public comment on items not on the agenda. And I do believe we get to go into electing a chairperson and vice chairperson for 2011. So, do I hear any motions?
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner O'Grady.
It certainly is an honor for me to move to nominate Commissioner Carlin Christensen to serve as the chair of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission for the year 2011.
Do we have a second to that motion?
Second that motion.
Okay, Ramona.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairperson Christensen?
I guess I was vice and now I'm chair. I guess. Thank you very much for that nomination and that election. I serve by default, let's just say. I've only been here 2 years, and I'm now the longest serving person on the commission. And when I joined 2 years ago, there were people who had served like 7 or 8 years. So I still feel like I'm new myself. But emails or telephone calls from Chris Crotty, who is a project representative, on December 20th, January 3rd, and January 12th. They were all regarding site visits. The first two were regarding to the possibility of a site visit with me individually, and then the one on the 12th was just to confirm that we would be discussing that item today's at today's meeting. That's my ex parte disclosure. Do I have seen anybody else? Mr. Topping?
Yes, I received on December 21st a similar request from Mr. Crotty, requesting time to meet separately and also a site visit, and I replied that I'd prefer to work through staff on the site visit and that I didn't have any questions at the time.
Great, thank you. Any other ex parte? Mr. Grady?
Yes, I attended a, I guess, a workshop or a seminar out at Tolosa to that was sponsored by SunPower to look at their solar panel installation out there, and I've received a number of the same email requests for other visits that Commissioner Topping just alluded to, but that's the only one I've attended so far.
Okay, thank you. Do I see, Mr. Irving?
And I, too, received one email from Mr. Crotty on the same subject.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hogue.
Your turn. Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and congratulations to you and Mr. O'Grady on your elections. I'm Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building, and the first thing I'd like to do before we get into the issue of the site visit to the Carissa Plains is just simply make sure that everyone's on the same page as far as the near-term schedule of Planning Commission meetings, because we have a couple of special meetings coming up, and I find that it's always useful to make sure the Planning Commission staff and the public are all on the same page. We do have our regular meetings on second and fourth Thursdays, and we will have a meeting on January 27th. That will be primarily devoted to the SunPower project and related issues, but there is also a Coastal Christian, the Coastal Christian School conditional use permit, which two of your commission is familiar with from the recent land use ordinance amendment that went through the process. Then on January 31st is the is a special meeting. That's a Monday. It's here in the board chambers. It begins at 2, and we anticipate it will be done by 5. And that's the study session on the Shandon Community Plan update. Then on February 3rd, again another special meeting, and that's the first Thursday of the month. It's the same week, so, you know, we'll be working you that week.
Yeah,
will be an all-day session on SunPower, and the time could be variable. It could either be the regular 9 to 5 time slot, or it could be a 1 to 9 time slot. We're going to figure that out after we get through some other preliminaries like the site visit and so on, but we'll let you know as soon as possible when we get that schedule solidified. Then in February, you're back to your second and fourth meetings, and we have fairly full agendas most of the way through the spring. And I will periodically update you at these meetings during this opportunity on schedule issues. One other thing we're going to try to work in as soon as we can, but it probably will be late spring, and I'll work with your chair on that, is a Planning Commission retreat, which will probably be on site upstairs like we did last year. But the details are yet to be worked out, and we'll announce those as we have a chance to put our heads together. So with that... now we can.
Warren, Mr. O'Grady had a question for
sure.
You on the schedule.
The February 3rd meeting, is that a Thursday?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I don't know if other commissioners have a preference or if expressing a preference at this time is helpful, but this commissioner would prefer the 9 to 5 because of a potential conflict with another meeting in the evening.
Okay. So, I'm sure that'll be taken into consideration. If we know of any other
schedules, about that? Were you serious about that?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Warren is not an ironic man.
I'm a straight shooter when it comes to schedules. I don't like evening meetings.
Does anybody else have a conflict with anything on that special meeting Thursday? No. Okay. Thanks for letting us know about that. Okay.
Okay, now turning to the specific issue of the site visit, I think Mr. Giffen would like to address that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy 2011. I'll join the chorus of everybody else this morning and welcome the new commissioners and congratulate Vice Chairperson O'Grady and Chairperson Christensen. As Warren kind of outlined, we have a very full agenda coming up for your commission. despite the recent years, and then we can talk a little bit about the administration and mechanics of how that would work.
Okay. Do you want me to lead that discussion now?
Sure.
Okay, I see that Mr. Topping has already indicated a desire to speak. Mr. Topping.
Speaking for myself, I'd like to...
Is your light on? Yellow light? Sorry. There you go.
Speaking for myself, I'd like to observe that this is a highly complex project with many facets to it and covers quite a sizable area. And I personally would benefit from being able to... I understand the commission occasionally does viewings as a group or at least in small subgroups, and either way would be beneficial to me. I think the importance would be the presence of staff.
Thank you. Anybody else want to say anything? Mr. Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes, I too would be interested in a site visit, but to be most respectful of commissioners' time as well as staff time, we have two solar projects, correct, that are in the same general vicinity. So if it would be possible to kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, and go scrutinize both of those sites at the same time, I'd like to encourage that.
Yes, I would just like to add that I would very much appreciate a site visit. I think they're really useful. They were useful to the commission in the past, and the idea of being able to visit both of these solar project sites at the same time would be great if it's possible. So that's my input. Mr. Irving or Mr. Murphy?
It is such a large area. I think you'd be looking at an all-day event to do both of them. That may be difficult to arrange. I have been to the first solar project. I wouldn't mind having a lot of time with the SunPower project. I've just driven by it on my own and got quite a bit lost about where things are. So I'd certainly having staff present is valuable. Definitely.
Okay. Mr. Murphy, anything to add?
Yeah, and I'd be interested in visiting both projects also, whether it's the same day or different day. Either one would work for me, but I think it'd be important to see what's out there.
Okay, there's your feedback.
Okay, perhaps one clarifying issue that would help us as we move forward with the administration, hearing that there is the collective input to have a field trip. One additional request that I would have is whether you would prefer to go as a group or whether or not you would prefer to go individually or in small groups, whether we make that as a part of the formal agenda or not.
Well, I personally would prefer to go as a group, just because that way the commission hears the same thing at the same time and asks the same questions and hears the same answers. If it's not logistically possible to do it, then smaller groups is fine. Individually, to me, is you get five different people who've heard five different things and seen five different, slightly different variations about the angle of the angle of view to two specific questions that might have been asked. So I really prefer, and strongly encourage everybody else to prefer, some kind of group visit.
Okay, so considering that's the direction we're going, the last follow-up question really is timing, whether you would find it beneficial to do a field trip at the beginning or more towards the middle after you would hear a presentation from staff.
I would say that our preference is to go towards a day that we actually could all do it, which is, I mean, logistically to me, it seems if finding the date first is more important than when exactly it happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although just to comment on that, I think it would be more meaningful to me anyway if we had some background first.
Okay.
Then we could maybe focus in on some areas that perhaps needed more explanation.
Okay, do you have some specifics on that, Ellen? Perhaps to accommodate that request, Vice Chairperson O'Grady, we could look at having it scheduled on the 27th with a brief staff presentation here and then going out into the field later that day. We have one item, as I understand.
Correct.
Which is that name of that warrant?
That's the Coastal Christian School.
the Coastal Christian School, which we don't necessarily expect to be a very long hearing. We could then, in the morning, have a brief overview and staff presentation, and we could spend the majority of the day traveling to, viewing, and then coming back.
Sounds good.
Yeah, Mr. Murphy.
How much time do you envision for a site visit? It's fairly lengthy drive out.
If you're okay with not getting back at the stroke of 5 o'clock,
we can't get back on the stroke of 5 o'clock. If we're starting a meeting at 9 and we're doing an item before that, that three people on this commission have never heard of, so there might be more questions and it might take longer. I can't even see us leaving before like 11 or 12. And it takes, what, at least a couple hours? An hour and a half? I don't know how long it takes to get out there. I've only been out there a few times.
It will be a long day, and if your commission's willing to go longer, we'll take the time that you need out.
Well, I'm just wondering if we might want to start, if we can find a different day where we start early, you know, start at 9 and go. I mean, I don't know.
Well, then the other suggestion is to have a fuller staff presentation on January 27th and then use February 3rd. For that visit,
yeah.
But then you will, you know, you won't have the benefit of having seen the site collectively during the discussion on the 27th.
Well,
so it's really up to you.
We
can, Jason, I'll toss it back.
Or we could even look at an alternate date. I know Warren already went through a pretty extensive schedule for you all for the beginning of the year. But if you have a preference for an alternate date other than the 27th or the 3rd. We could accommodate that as well.
Well, I'm just thinking practically that on the 27th, if we have an item, and then we have a staff presentation, and then we start public comment, we're not going to get that far anyway, so that waiting until the 3rd might work. Do you hear anything from anybody else?
Well, and I'm worried about my outfit, because if I show up here in shirt and tie and then we go out to the site in boots and you know, jeans and what have you, I'm sorry if that's just crazily practical.
We'll have to bring some cases. Anyway, I'm not I know that Mr. Hogue usually has a very optimistic view of how efficient we are, but I'm a little more concerned about the actual reality of getting out there and seeing it and back. Anything close to 5 or 6 hours, that just seems impractical and unrealistic. Mr. Topping?
Yes. I agree, and if we're going to be out there anyway, you have to go past the other site. That's coming up later to get to this site.
Microphone, please.
Oh.
Sorry. If we're going to be out there after, if we're going to be out there to see this site, we're going to be driving past the other site, the first solar site.
And so we want to see both.
It would seem like if we're going to take all day, let's see both.
Right.
And
so I think we're kind of moving towards trying to maybe do it on the 3rd or finding an alternate time.
Yeah, well, at this time, I think the 3rd is, sure, it's a possibility, but I think what we would like to do is see if we can find an alternate date. And I don't know if perhaps you have any suggestions, Mr. Hogue, or whether there'd be a date that the commission would prefer.
Well, the immediate need is we need to print the agenda for the 27th, and I was waiting for this discussion to know what to say. And I think I now know what to say, is that we'll have the hearing.
Right.
And then we will regroup on the viewing trip and get back to you all.
Okay.
Does that sound like a good interim plan?
Yeah.
Sure
does.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. If we didn't have another item first, I would be much more much more willing, but I just think that's impractical.
Madam Chair, Jim Orton from County Council's office, that will also give staff time to report on how the public would be involved in the logistics of it on the 27th.
Okay. Okay, good. So we have decided that we are going to have a group site visit, hopefully including both of the solar projects, and it will not be on the 27th, but we're not sure when it is going to be, but staff's going to work on that as far as a date. goes. So on the 27th, our agenda will include the first item, the Christian Coastal School, and then the application of the Sun Power and Twistleman Ranch. So anything else from you, Mr. Hoog?
That's all I had. I'm going to look at the front row here and see if any other staff had an update, and I don't see anyone jumping to the podium. So I think that's it for now. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And just to remind Mr. O'Grady and Mr. Irving, just hit me if I'm not looking your way. I'm still new at this. Okay. Consent agenda. Moving on to the consent agenda. Do we want to pull any items, or do I have a motion?
I move to accept the consent agenda.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. I hear a motion and a second for the consent agenda. Ramona, do you do a roll call, or do I just do a voice? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The consent agenda passes.
I'd like to introduce what we call informally our winery team. And that's Karen Nall, senior planner. She's raising her hand, or raising her hand to her mouth, and also Holly Phipps. And for virtually all or most of the winery projects, you're going to see these two involved. And we have two conditional use permits coming up. They both don't seem to represent the same scale of issues that some of you have considered in the past, because special events and aren't really the focus. And other public aspects. But I just wanted to give you that brief introduction to our folks that work in that particular specialty. So with that, I'll turn it over to the project manager, Holly Phipps.
And excuse me, Holly, before you start, do we have any ex parte on this item? Okay, none. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, Holly. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Planning Commission. Holly Phipps, project manager. On behalf of our Planning Commission, I would like to welcome our new planning commissioners. So, okay, today we have a request by Halter Properties for a conditional use permit to allow the addition, the construction of an 805-square-foot addition onto their previously approved 1,184-square-foot tasting room. The proposed project is located in the agricultural land use category. It is located on the north side of Adelaida Road, approximately 8 miles from the city of Paso Robles. The site is located within the Adelaida planning area. Here is a quick look at the site plan. The footprint shows the existing tasting room, currently in white, and the expansion is shown in a darker color here. So currently existing today on site is a 560-square-foot tasting room. Past approvals, as I mentioned, allow for a 1,184-square-foot tasting room. This construction has never occurred. The project today is an addition of 805 square feet to the previously approved 1,184-square-foot tasting room. So at build-out, the tasting room would be 1,989 square feet if built. Actual construction would entail approximately 1,400 square feet. Here we have a look at what the tasting room would look like. It's residential in nature. Here we have a picture of the back of the tasting room where most of the construction would occur. Staff has a few changes to the staff report. I asked Ramona to pass out those changes. On page 6, finding F, staff would like to add a period to the last sentence, please. On page 1-8, staff would like to modify condition 10 to delete an extra space behind the number 1. On page 1-8, staff would like to add a new condition after condition 9, and then we would renumber accordingly. I'd like to read this condition. Prior to issuance of a construction permit, the applicant shall obtain the appropriate health department permits. The health department will require the following information. A, a permit for water supply if necessary. B, a hazardous materials questionnaire. C, evidence that the existing septic system is adequate to serve the proposal. And D, if plan review for cross-connection determines the device is necessary, then an annual device test shall be provided. E, verify permits requirements for food sales, prepackaged, period. Staff is recommending approval of this conditional use permit based on the changes as read into the record and based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. Here today with us to help answer any questions is Leslie Terry from Environmental Health and Steve McMasters from our Environmental Division. That concludes staff presentation.
And thank you very much, Holly. Okay, so, Commission, what we usually do is we ask quick questions. If you have something that you just need some short clarification, kind of a yes-no answers, we ask those questions, and then we go ahead and move into public comment. And then after that, we bring it back for discussion and a motion if we want. So do we have a question? Any questions?
Not at this time, but I will during the after public comment.
Yeah. Mr. O'Grady, anything?
Just a question about food. You mentioned food and health department, and I see where you did add their requested conditions. But then E, permit requirements for food sales. Will there be or not be food sales on this particular project?
Currently, the Halter Winery is serving prepackaged food like salami, cheese, non-alcoholic beverages, water in a small, cold, refrigerated case just as you walk in the door. It's a small little serving area.
Your commission, but because there was a previous conditional use permit for a larger phased winery on the site, that is why you're seeing it this morning. There is a larger tasting room that is approved with the larger project, but that tasting room construction for that probably won't start for 4 years, 4 to 5 years, and completion maybe out as far as 7 years once construction is done. And what Halter Ranch is seeing right now, they've got a very small tasting room. They've got a growing wine club, and they've got a lot of visitors. So there's an immediate need for some more area to serve their customers because obviously they want to sell their wine, so they want to be able to have as many people in there as they can to sell their wine. So what we're proposing is we were looking at doing the small addition that was approved under the previous use permit, and whenever we started looking at storage areas, admin areas, and what would really work for a tasting room, it got about 800 square foot bigger. So I'm available for questions. I know the question of food sales has come up a bit, and with the wineries, you know, the staff can talk about it, but education for the commission is there's restaurant uses, which is different than the food sales that Halter Ranch is doing. This is a cold case. Most wineries have them. It's part of the small retail component of the tasting room. So when people are out in the rural area, they have the opportunity. If they didn't think ahead and pack their picnic, they would have the opportunity to buy some salami or cheese or something that's prepackaged, not made on site. So that's what we're doing on site. I'm available for questions if you have any.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Kirk. Do we have anybody else who wants to speak on this item? If not, I'm going to go ahead and bring it back to the commission for discussion and a motion. Mr. Irvin, you are the commissioner, so you get first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions of staff. First of all, just sort of my own background, under the environmental review, I think it's 1-4, it comments that it's near a Blue Line stream, and is there a specific distance that is referenced that requires action in that case, a distance from the stream?
No, not in this particular case. This is located in an Adelaide planning area standard, but typically if you're located in Elpomar planning area standard, there is a 100 and 300 foot setback depending on the topography of the land. But it's also common practice that if you're within 300 feet of a Blue Line stream, that we look for things that would identify this having the potential to have cultural resources on site.
So generally within 300 feet is what you're saying if it's not specifically in the area plan.
Yes.
Is that right? Thank you. Going on further, there is a couple of issues with regard to the driveway that had me confused. Public Works wants the driveway improved to a principal driveway, and I'm curious as to why that hadn't been a previous requirement. Why is it entering into it at this time?
Public Works isn't here to discuss that.
Yes, they are.
But they
all these new faces are bad.
I was looking back here. I apologize. Perhaps they missed it in the past, but
I can respond. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. This is a very typical situation. Whenever we get a referral for a project, we typically use Google or aerial views to see if they've got a county standard driveway. And if they do, we just put a general stock condition in there saying it needs to be upgraded, if not already, to a B1 rural driveway standard. And this is to ensure that there's some pavement that extends from the edge of pavement, the existing edge of pavement, to the property line. And it acts as two things. One, as cars, vehicles drive over it, it doesn't break up the edge of our roadway. And two, it knocks off any sort of gravels or anything. It keeps it from tracking onto our roads. Okay. So this is a stock condition. You'll see this quite frequently. Okay.
Thank you.
Irving.
Thank you. And then further on, with regard to gates, which is also a public works issue, Cal Fire's requirement says in the report on 123 says the gate should be 30 feet from the road. Public Works says 75. Could you explain what that difference is all about? Fire department doesn't overrule you, I take it?
We work well with the fire department. Glenn Marshall, once again, with Public Works. The 75-foot rule is for arterials and collectors, and it's mainly due to if they're doing wine processing, meaning in certain months of the year they bring larger trucks onto their site, and if the gate is closed, those larger trucks hang out over at our roadway and cause a safety issue. So we ask that if they're processing grapes on site, that they set back their gates at least 75 feet to accommodate the larger trucks.
Remark is complete.
Yes, you are correct. Okay. And when they are ready to open their new tasting room, they call planning for a development review inspection, and then planning goes out to the site to verify that everything, all the conditions are met.
Okay. I noted that the Templeton Area Advisory Group, TAG, recommended an ADA parking space be delineated, and I guess I didn't see that was going to be part of the project. Is it or not?
When the building permits are submitted, they have to comply with the ADA compliant standards, and they will be required to have ADA parking. Currently, there is an ADA parking space there, but they will be required to adhere to that.
Okay, so that's, again, kind of a routine code process that happens. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. That might just be it. Yes, thank you.
All right, pretty straightforward. Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Toppy?
Just a quick question. There's nothing implied in this action that relates to future actions, right? You're talking about a possible future project here, but there's no connection, right?
There is a connection because of the two tasting rooms, and we listed in the conditions the other land use permits that are going to be carried through.
I was thinking about the CEQA side of it.
The larger project is already approved.
Ah.
It's approved action.
Great. Okay.
Good point. Any other questions? All right. Do we have a motion on this?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move approval of the request to...
So, Mr. Irving, go ahead and look at that recommended action on the first
read it
page.
Out. Read the whole thing.
Yeah, we want to hear those numbers.
Yes. Yep. Move approval of... Approved conditional use permit DRC 2010-00005 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
As modified.
Thank you.
Very good. We'll hear a second.
I'll second that.
All right. My only question had been on the Health Department letter, which was addressed by this new condition, so I'm happy to support it. And Ramona, will you please read the roll call?
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson Christensen?
Aye. And so we have a 5-0 vote approving this application. Thank you very much, Ms. Kirk. And Halter Ranch, an excellent winery. I'll just say that, as far as their wine goes. I don't know anything about their tasting room. okay. We move on to, and congratulations, Mr. Irving. You've done your first motion on the commission. You're an experienced member now, and we'll expect you to pull that full weight as we go forward. Okay, Ramona, item two, please.
Hearing to consider a request by Richard and Joyce Murray for a conditional use permit, county file number DRC 2010-00017, Supervisorial District 1, Holly Phipps, project manager.
Do we have any ex parte on this item?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Ms. Phipps, again, thank you.
Thank you. Holly Phipps, project manager. Before you today is a request by Richard and Joyce Murray for a conditional use permit to allow for a conversion of a 1,140-square-foot ag building into a winery. No public tasting is proposed. No special events have been proposed. The proposed project is located in within the residential rural land use category. It is located at the intersection of Hawk Ridge Place and Golden Eagle Way, approximately 5 miles north of the city of Paso Robles. The site is located in the El Pomar Australia planning area. Here we have a look at the aerial. What the aerial does not show us is that there is an existing barn where the arrow points to today. Site plan, this would be the barn right here. Additional, the Murrays have a permit to build a house. Again, staff would like to modify condition in the staff report. Condition 9, we would like to include, and I believe you have a handout of that. And condition 9 would read as follows. 9, A, B, C, and D are the same, and we would add E. If plan review for cross-connection determines a device is necessary, then annual device test requirement shall be added. Staff is recommending approval of this conditional use permit based on the...
I'm one half of the ownership of our small vineyard out in the San Miguel area. Would appreciate your approval. We have a barn that was fully approved that is in place at the present time, and no additional construction is going to be required. There are some questions. If you have some questions about some of our other plans, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you very much. Could you please also just grab a speaker slip and hand that out up to Mr. Hoag?
This?
Ask him a question.
Nope. It's got to be a little piece of white paper. Yeah. We can ask him a question.
Back there in that hole.
Okay.
Oh, and sorry, Mr. Murray, we have a question.
Yeah, I was wondering how many acres of grapes you actually grow?
We have 7.5 acres.
Okay, and then you're talking about producing 2,000 cases of wine. How many cases can you produce on site versus grapes brought in approximately?
We really don't know because this is last year was our first major harvest. We are currently processing at two other locations, not at our existing location, and in order to do 2,000 cases, we're probably going to have to buy in the vicinity of 3 tons more than what we have at our on our premises.
And that would be maybe, that'd be the equivalent of a couple acres of production, maybe then.
Yeah, give or take. You figure 2.5 to 3 tons per acre.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, if I don't see any more speaker slips, no more people clamoring, we're going to bring it back to the commission for discussion and a motion. Mr. Irving.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions of staff. Again, with regard to the discussion from CAL FIRE regarding the road, there are some requirements that are listed within the CAL FIRE report, but the Independence Ranch roads are all maintained by a CSD. And I'm kind of wondering how you put a burden or how CAL FIRE puts a burden on an individual when it's when the roads are not that individual's roads to maintain, but they're under the jurisdiction of a services district. That would be 224, Karen.
Karen Nall with the Planning Division, if you're referring to the commercial access road,
yes,
those are the on-site roads.
Oh, on the property itself. Right. Okay, so it has nothing to do with the applicant having to improve Hawk Ridge or Golden Eagle back to the county road.
Correct. So these would be items that are under the control of the applicant.
Great. Thank you. On to a couple of other questions, I guess, would sort of both under environmental. On 2-7 and 8, there's requests, comments about septic issues. And I believe I had made inquiry of Ms. Phipps previous to the meeting about that. There is an existing septic tank. Is there going to be a requirement to extend or build another septic tank? And is that usual, necessary?
I don't believe Hollycliff's planning staff, I do not believe that they will be required to expand their existing septic system because they will not be having the public tasting, any additional people okay. coming to the site for public tasting or special events that would bump that capacity level up. The building division will look at that to make sure that for the use for their mom and pop run winery that what they're asking for, this new use, that it will be in compliance and can handle the capacity, but I do not foresee any.
So in terms of looking at that, they're just going to go back and look at what was originally permitted for the construction of the barn, and we'll just the Murrays don't have to dig up the tank or call for an inspection of the tank.
They should have that on record in the building
from the original construction.
The capacity, right, of the septic.
Great, thank you. And then finally, there is a kind of a comment that's somewhat vague in my terminology on 2-8. Requires that there is adequate water. Could you be more specific as what is required? What is adequate defined at in an area where well production can vary pretty widely?
Which one?
It's on 2-8.
It's on page 2-8, condition 9D.
Essentially how the process works, the referral process to the health department, is they alert the county if there are known areas that have water concerns. So in a case, I don't believe they're going to be looking at gallons per minute.
Thank you. I'm just concerned that you get into the project and then all of a sudden somebody comes up with a new definition of what adequate is without knowing it in advance. And so I think you've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Warren, you have anything to add?
Just simply to say that in the Environmental Health Department's experience, if they feel that there has been enough water available for the domestic water supply for presumably the house on the property, and they see evidence that there's a successful agricultural operation on the site, unless they have reason to believe there's very marginal supplies available in that immediate area, they typically will not go to the point of requiring pump tests. If there were additional residences proposed, you know, that do require a guaranteed domestic supply, then they might. In this case, I don't think they would. I wish Ms. Terry had waited one more item to leave, because I'd rather have her answer this question, but I believe what Holly and Karen have told you is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Irving. Mr. O'Grady.
I, too, spoke with Ms. Phipps prior to the meeting and had some questions, which she answered very thoroughly, by the way. But I thought perhaps the public and other commissioners might benefit from hearing what those were. One, I could not find the CEQA guideline sections referenced in the handy-dandy CEQA guideline book that I was given last year as a commissioner. And come to find out that the publication that was actually referenced was this California Environmental Quality Act of 2009 statute and guidelines. I don't know, Mr. Hogue, if this is a compact document that could be provided to commissioners instead of this one. We could track those references, or
there are two documents that do sort of the same thing, but one is the overall state guidelines and the other is the county's guidelines for implementing those guidelines.
Okay. Oh,
and I think we probably could make that available to you. It's a pretty long document.
Wow.
Mr. McMasters has a copy in his hand, and he just held it up. Okay. And I don't know, Steve, if you want to address this, but we certainly can make that available to you, or at least the key parts.
Sure. Commissioner O'Grady, Steve McMasters, Environmental Division. Yeah, the way it works is there's actually the statutes for the California Environmental Quality Act, the infamous CEQA. That's in the government code. There's implementing state guidelines for that, and actually those have grown to be more comprehensive and more actually maybe informative than the actual statutes. And those are revised from time to time by the state. The Green Book includes the counties implementing it. Every lead agency has to have a set of local guidelines that allows you to implement CEQA as a lead agency, and that's what we have. And so those sections that were referenced are really going back to the state guidelines. The state guidelines include the categorical exemptions. For instance, it lists the number of categories and describes them. So it is a key thing, and we can certainly provide these. It's also easily accessible on the web. I think a lot of people jump to that now quicker.
Well, maybe I could do that. I kind of have a library of Planning Commission and county documents. I flag those things so that I can reference those even quicker than going online.
And, but, you know, what I'm holding up here is 2009. I mean, they print a new version because there are changes from time to time. A lot of the sections that we use, like the categorical exemptions, haven't changed in a while. So when I grab my 2009, I know I'm still good with that section. But this comes out every year. They print a new version because there are changes from time to time. So
perhaps you could ask individual commissioners their preference, because I know some commissioners are very handy online and some, like me, maybe less so.
And we can certainly make it available to provide a copy if the commissioners want one. So we'll get that question to you.
While you're up there, as I was trying to understand why there were a categorical exemption for this project. I did read language in there that said as long as it's not a environmentally sensitive area. And I thought the land use ordinance defined residential areas as environmentally sensitive because of noise. So maybe I'm misinterpreting that, but that's why I'm raising it.
I think there might be a slight misinterpretation, only that the term sensitive is used in two different contexts. The environmentally sensitive areas identified in the guidelines are specific to, I could go to the beginning and say, but it's typically wetlands.
To the recent discussions on the resource capacity study and learning about the Estrella area as being in this cone of depression, this is located in the Estrella area, is it not, where the water is levels have dropped substantially in certain portions of that area?
Not exactly.
No, it's not. Oh, okay.
The project is within the Estrella sub-area, the Paso Robles groundwater basin. Could we bring up the slides, please? Sorry. The project site is within the Estrella sub-area of the Paso Robles groundwater basin. However, it is outside the Estrella Creston area of concern, which is a portion of the basin that is experiencing rapidly declining water, as you stated.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted the public to know that we were kind of looking into some of these things
Mr. O'Grady, if it's not clear, the red line of that area of concern is shown on the graphic and the site's relationship to it.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Those were good questions. Any other questions? Do we hear a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move approval of conditional use permit DRC 2010-00017 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified.
Second. Ramona.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Chairperson Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
5-0. Thank you very much. Your permit is approved, and thank you very much, Holly and Ms. Nall. You did a great job. Really appreciate it. Okay, so we have our third item coming up, and I didn't know, does the commission want to take its break now and then go into our third item, or do you want to get started and then?
Why don't we get started and
split the difference. Okay, we'll get started and maybe take our break in about 20 minutes or so. I know that we'll give staff a minute or two to reorganize themselves. And Mr. Murray, did you bring up your speaker slip?
Yes, sir.
Okay, excellent. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay.
Hearing to consider
a
request by County of San Luis Obispo to amend chapters 22.24 and 22.26 of the Land Use Ordinance, Title 22 of the County Code, the Transfer of Development Credits Program. County file number LRP 2008-00012, Supervisorial Districts 1, 3, 4, and 5, Karen Nall, Project Manager.
Okay, Ms. Nall.
Thank you. Sorry I have to get adjusted here to the different role, sitting on the other side of the desk. But we are here today to discuss the Transfer of Development Credit Program. A little program background. The original program was adopted back in 1996, and over the years it has had quite a few modifications to the program. Back in 2006, in July, the Board of Supervisors created a TDC Blue Ribbon Committee to take a look at the program overall, and the committee met for 2 years. It met 33 times. It was quite an extensive project, and they prepared a final report for the Board of Supervisors. That final report is attached to your staff report. It does give a good history of the program and use of the program to date. But what came out of the final report was what we call two phases. Phase one is amendments to the existing program that are some kind of stopgap measures, some easier amendments to the program. Phase two would be a major overhaul of the program. It would be a very costly endeavor. So at this point, we're moving forward with phase one, which your board authorized back in March of 2009. So the amendments that were authorized are there's three parts. The first is to the sending sites, and this amendment would limit the creation of all new sending sites to only areas that have community-based programs. And currently there are two. One is the South County area, which includes the entire credits, and I have some handouts for you that let me walk those up.
Thank you.
And I must have miscounted when I made copies. Maybe I can steal one from. Sorry. sorry about that. I was hoping for a break.
You probably thought there were only two commissioners to make copies.
Yeah. Okay, so what we're talking about now is the proposed amendments, the additional uses for credits, and in your staff report that begins on page 3-15. So this is a major change for the project or for the program. On the bottom of 3-15, it would require mandated credits for any kind of general plan amendment that is changing the density or proposing to change the density. The second part of the required or mandated uses of credits would be for rural subdivisions. This would require the use of a credit for subdivisions that actually meet all the rules for subdivision. These would not be considered receiving sites, but they would require the credit. So let me walk through these changes. The first page, what we discovered adding the land division is there was no tie-in to the ordinance for land divisions. If you go to the land division section, we're proposing to add this language so one would know if you're proposing to do a land division that a credit would be required. It ties you back. So that's on that first page that I handed out. Second proposed change is because of the eligibility criteria where we noted that a receiving site must be within an urban or village reserve line or within a community-based program. We wanted to make sure that you knew if you were in South County or South Atascadero that you refer to those plans. You don't go to item C, which talks about base density. And then the other change was a sentence added under B just to clarify how those credits will be retired for land divisions. So with that, that ends my presentation, and I expect there will be some questions.
Expect there will be. So let me just go ahead and review your little handout of additions. What you've added is you've added one. The first page goes over a little small reference in the land divisions ordinance about the transfer, about the TDC program to tie it back. That's kind of contained in whole on that first page. And then the second page is basically a reprint of what we were already given, but you've added in this section right above the A, this where you've underlined the properties located within the South County planning area. That's new. And then down on the bottom under B, that second sentence under the heading B, which says credits shall be retired in accordance with section 22.24.090 at the time of subdivision recordation following approval of the general plan amendment or land division. That's the other sentence you've added.
That's correct.
Okay. But so the second two pages really aren't all new information. It's just reprint so we could figure out where it fit in.
That's added.
Oh, and that's added too? Oh, okay. And then, yeah. The same.
Oh, and the heading. Yes.
And then the heading. Okay. On the third page. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't having to read three pages of ordinance language all at once. Okay, just adding in a couple of things. So questions. Do we have any questions from the commission? This is in four districts, not our coastal district, but it isn't any one particular district's area, so I'll go ahead and just entertain questions. Mr. Murphy?
Yeah.
Then we'll go to comment.
On this proposed additional language, we're talking about section 2222. That's the land division as opposed to the transfer development credit.
Correct.
Section, I guess, is the right. That's my concern.
A little bit of the history of the TDC program, and she helped me fill in a little bit of the background. So that's it.
Thanks. I wasn't sure about ex parte for these kinds of applications, so I didn't mention it, but thank you. Any questions? Mr. Irving.
Yes, just one quick question, Karen, was
Has this document that you've prepared for today, has that been run back past through this Blue Ribbon Committee, or did they, when they made their final report to the supervisors, were they disbanded and that was the end of it?
That's correct. They were, a Blue Ribbon Committee may only meet for 2 years, and they met right down to the wire, and then it is disbanded.
Good question. Okay, I don't see any other questions at this point, and then so we'll go ahead and get to our public comment. This doesn't actually have an applicant or anything, so we just have public comment. We have Jamie Kirk first, and then followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Jamie Kirk, and I'm here representing myself. I'm a resident of Atascadero. When I was reviewing this, I had some questions, concerns, comments, suggestions. As I understand it, in North County, there's 33 credits left. So we have 33 credits. Looking at the availability for sending sites only to be within the South Atascadero area, knowing South Atascadero area, I don't know that what the options are for sending sites. How many more receiving credits are we going to be able to get out of that area? I'm wondering if staff has done an inventory of the potential of additional credits that might be able to come out of those sending sites. If we're left with the 33 credits, what happens once that existing inventory is exhausted? Are we able to swap credits between South County and North County? I don't think so. I think in North County, we're left with 33 credits. So does this mean that once this ordinance is adopted, is this a ceiling of subdivisions in the rural areas and general plan amendments that would increase density? I kind of think so. I have a concern about the impact of affordability. Since the availability of sending sites will be diminished to 33, we have 33 credits, then it comes supply and demand. The last time we did a TDC project, the TDCs were running around $15,000 to $20,000. That price is going to go up because now the holders of those credits know that there's only 33 left and they're needed for these what would be normal applications. So the reality is that cost of the credit, it's not going to be absorbed by the property owner. It's going to be passed on to a buyer. So that's going to really decrease the affordability of properties in our North County. I would suggest as a remedy to this that in subsection C, where we have these exceptions for the requirement for TDCs for the subdivisions in the rural areas that meet standards or the general plan amendments that don't meet the other findings, is that we just have clearly a subsection and opt out. When there's no TDC credits left to purchase for the project, there isn't the requirement. So we don't run into a moratorium, and we're not, so property owners, their hands aren't tied. You know, some summary comments on, you know, I understand the county wants to encourage development within the urban areas. That's for the smart growth implementation into framework for planning and AB 32. But what we've observed in kind of the private industry is we're not incentivizing development within these urban areas. We're more looking at discouraging development in rural areas. So instead of continuing to look at ordinances that put burdens on our rural property owners, let's look at incentives for the urban areas. Let's decrease building permit fees. Let's decrease impact fees, traffic fees, increase processing time. So an owner, when someone's looking at property, they say, oh, I want to go here. It's not, I have to go here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kirk. I'm sure we'll have staff address those concerns after public comment. Mr. Greening, followed by Mr. Wynn.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I definitely approve staff recommendation in general, certainly one and two without comment. Number three, I think Ms. Kirk raised an issue, and I think just words like if available can help mitigate that. Obviously, if there are none available, there are none available. But I do want to speak to the need for reform of the previous existing program. The history of the program we had was that we were essentially creating about 5 to 6 new entitlements for each entitlement retired. None of the new lots created under this were what you would call strategic growth. They were all 1 acre plus outside of urban and village reserve lines. In other words, they were not proving to be the design tool they were sold as. And certainly in defense of the idea behind number three, we need to distinguish between the time that this became a sort of a receiving area, and I'm glad it will now be a sending area to balance that receiving area, is that it is robustly served by public transit. The Route 9 runs down El Camino, 14 round trips on weekdays. The bad news is that the short-range transit plan approved by the Regional Transit Authority had the appalling idea, which needs as much resistance as it can get, to go from 14 round trips a day to 2 in the distant future. And that's based on the assumption that express buses on the freeway are a better sell to people in cars. But the number one goal of transit must be to serve the existing community, and we need to robustly defend the transit that is part of the assumption we made when that was decided to be a receiving area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Wynn.
Good morning again, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm speaking for the Napomo Community Services District. TDCs have been robustly and earnestly opposed by virtually everybody in the county outside of two groups. Incorporated cities have found it a very useful planning tool, and planning staff love it. But everybody else dislikes it. I don't say that anecdotally. All but one advisory council has gone on record in opposition to the use of TDCs in their area. What happens? The committee did meet for 2 years. It was fiercely divided. There was a great deal of heat, and the staff version was eventually adopted by the staff, but it has never had robust support, even within the Blue Ribbon Committee that worked on it for the 2 years. And here's the irony of it all. Two of the communities that were most bitterly opposed and argued that a TDC should be eliminated from the entire county. In fact, they got to the point that they actually had 3 votes of the supervisors asking staff to tell them how to eliminate them. The recommendation came back, let's don't eliminate it, let's improve it. Those two communities formed community-based TDC plans as a defense against a wider use of TDCs. That was south of Tascadero in my own community, Napomo. The Napomo plan incorporated 2 things. One, a provision, if you've seen it, that we would be able to review and make recommendations. It also brought a solemn assurance, which has been honored until now, that any TDC receiving site within the South County planning area would not be approved unless the advisory council recommended so. Is that legally binding? Of course not. Recommendations come from advisory councils. But public trust is based on keeping one's word, keeping faith with the public. And that's been the case. There's a candidate standing in the wings right now looking for these TDCs, which has been rejected twice by the advisory council, and both times Planning Commission followed through. But 3 of you are brand new today, and you don't carry that history into this question. I urge you to keep faith with the public and not to approve this. I also will point out, just for the record, that the additions that you received today did not have advance public notice. You didn't get a chance to look at them in advance, and I don't think that it's appropriate to approve a plan that nobody else has had a chance. There are many other people who would be here today if they had known that their area was being added to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Do I see any other slips? I do not. So we're going to bring it back to the commission, and we are going to actually take our break now. And then when we come back, we'll have staff address some of the concerns raised by the public, and we'll move on to our discussion and a motion if necessary. So we'll be back at 10:45. Call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back to order. Sorry for the slight delay. We're doing some administrative stuff here. And, beginning of the year always takes a little time to reorganize ourselves. Okay, so we have been in the middle of our hearing item 3 on some TDC amendments, TDC program amendments, and we've had public comment and brought it back to the commission, and I assume that staff would like to respond to the concerns raised by Ms. Kirk, Mr. Greening, and Mr. Wynn.
Cami Griffin would actually like to respond to those public comments.
Okay.
I'll try and catch the ones that I can, and then Karen will jump in if I forget. So thank you, Madam Chair. Cami Griffin, County Planning. The first item that I wanted to respond to is Ms. Kirk brought up sending site credits and the not just within the existing community-based programs. So you could look to forming a new community-based program and create sending and receiving sites within that community-based program. So although we feel that you know, we don't know how many people will take advantage of that, there is the ability to create some additional sending sites. In addition, with the exception, the way it's laid out, it can be a conscious decision by the review authority to not impose the requirements for credits. And we would rather have those findings, those four findings, be made by the review authority as a conscious decision versus just putting an automatic out on there. Also, to Mr. Greening's comments, on your page 376, yes, 376, which then I promptly turned to the wrong page and wondered why it wasn't the right page, but it is page 376, is a itemization of where the credits have been used. And there was testimony that all of the credits have been used in rural for rural subdivisions. And 119 of the credits used have been used within urban and rural, or within village and rural, village and urban reserve lines. And only 90 credits have been used for rural subdivisions. And so, you know, there have been more credits used within the urban areas than the testimony would have led you to believe. The last comment that I have, I have two more. Mr. Wynn did bring up the changes that you were given today, which we can make available to him also. These were minor wording corrections. They weren't substantial changes to the program. They did not add or subtract any kind of areas from the program. They were just clarifications that typically Karen would have read into the record, but we have had requests from your Planning Commission to try and provide these in written form because they're easier to follow. But they were so minor as to that she could have read them into the record. And along those lines, I actually have one more correction I would like to read into the record, and it's on your page 3-15. And it's under B1, and this is relative to the general plan amendments. The first sentence reads, transfer of development credits shall be required to be retired when a property owner requests a change to a land use category which would result in an increase in density over what is currently allowed. We want that sentence to continue on to say, through establishment of planning area standards. That is the way that we would then notify future applicants or future owners or even future staff that TDCs are required on that site prior to recordation of their map.
I don't have page numbers anymore on the
revised,
so could you give us a paragraph number?
It would
number,
be section 22.24.070, capital B1. It would be to add at the end after allowed through establishment of planning area standards.
Madam Chair, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I could talk about that briefly. The requirement to retire transferable development credits at the time you seek a general plan amendment sort of raises the question of, you know, if your plan is to get a change in land use designation now and not record a subdivision map for some time, when would we actually require you to retire the credits? And I think by stating in our ordinance that when you come in for the land use category change, we'll create a planning area standard that says when this property seeks to subdivide, it shall retire development credits. We can capture the idea, but not require you to actually retire the credits at the time you come in for the general plan amendment.
Okay. We may have questions, but we're going to hold off for now. Thank you, Mr. McNulty. Anything else from staff in response?
Did I miss anything? Okay.
I don't think so. Ms. Nall, do you have anything to say?
I do not.
Okay. We're going to bring it back to the commission for discussion, and looks like Mr. Murphy has his light on first. Mr. Murphy.
All right. Kind of going back where I started, but I guess my concern, this is one that was brought up in public testimony, and you just mentioned, or counsel did about, well, you're jumping around here, I'm sorry, but your last amendment was to establish planning area standards. I'm not sure what section that is in the land use ordinance, but I assume it's another section that's somewhere outside of the TDC section of the land use ordinance.
That's correct. The under our system,
I'm going to get sections and subsections, or I don't know if I'm using the right language, but anyway, that's a part of the land use ordinance. We have this proposal that was put in writing as an amendment to today's agenda, which would be amending 2222 land division, not the transfer development credit section. So this is a concern I had when I read the staff report. It appears to me we're making a change to the land division ordinance, not to the TDC ordinance, item number 3 on today's agenda.
Yeah, I thought that was clarified when you asked that question earlier, but the answer was a little less clear than I would have wanted. I almost jumped in at that point. So the county's land division ordinance is Title 21. The zoning ordinances are Title 22 for the inland area and Title 23 for the coastal area. The section 2222, Chapter 2222, actually is the subdivision design standards that are located within the zoning ordinance. And the purpose of those is to really establish the criteria for a subdivision within our zoning ordinance. We have a separate county subdivision ordinance that applies, and that is not proposed for amendment as part of this package.
Okay,
so, in other words, we are not amending Title 21 today. We are only amending different chapters within Title 22, or recommending that amendment to the Board of Supervisors.
Right. That's kind of my concern, is that we're looking at amending sections of the land use ordinance that are not part of the TDC section 2224 or whatever it is. And when I look at the agenda that was put out, I don't know that this point is brought up, that the public, if they looked at that agenda, if they read the staff report in detail, they might see what's taking place. But if they look at the agenda, they may not realize we're talking about this item 3, where we're placing a new condition on subdivisions or parcel maps outside of urban reserve lines within the county,
actually,
inland portion of the county.
Maybe I can clarify, Cami Griffin again. The language that is proposed to be added to Section 2222 is in the introductory part of our portion of the land use ordinance that sets forth the minimum parcel sizes for land divisions. All it does is reference that there are these requirements as part of the TDC ordinance, which is 2224, that may affect subdivisions. And it was a hope that would clarify for the user that was going through our ordinance and looking perhaps only in the parcel size standards of our ordinance, that they also needed to check with 2224. The TDC portion of our ordinance. But the language in 2224 was there. It was noticed. It's been in our draft ordinances that we've had out to the public and that we've spoken with the community advisory groups about, and it's that language that requires the requirement, retirement of credits for subdivision.
To me, my point is I think we got it backwards. This requirement should be somewhere in the land use portion or the land division portion, saying if you're going to do this project, you need to look at TDC. It shouldn't be in the TDC. If you read TDC, the first paragraph says this is a voluntary program. Well, I might stop reading right there because it's a voluntary program, and then find out, no, wait a minute, there's a mandatory requirement within the voluntary program that I didn't know about. So I believe this actually, and then indeed we end up trying to amend 2222 here, just specifically what I'm referring to. So I, I think item three, you know, in my mind, may have not even been properly noticed for this meeting today.
I think that you raise a good point. I hadn't thought about it, but I look at our agenda for today, and we don't just talk about Title 22. We talk specifically about 22.24 and 22.26, and we make no mention of 22.22. So I think you've raised an excellent point that I just hadn't thought about and hadn't really reviewed the agenda item prior to that.
Madam Chair, I don't dare disagree with County Council. However, as part of your action as the commission, you oftentimes go outside of the areas that have been specifically noticed, especially when it comes to ordinance amendments. If your commission were interested in shifting the section of 2224 into section 2222, for instance, you could make that recommendation to the board, and I don't think the notice, we could not have predicted that in advance, for instance, if it just came up today, and I don't think the notice would be inadequate.
Well, let me just kind of add to the discussion in the sense that I understand Mr. Murphy's concerns. My understanding of what this little section here on this first page of the editions is not it's a change to language, but it's a change to language that only references other language. It isn't actually adding anything in itself. It isn't actually changing anything. This section 22.22.020, from what I understand you're saying, is only saying, hey, remember to look over here in this other
area. That burden on somebody who wants to do a parcel map in a rural area is, I don't know, I'd be like, wow, what are they going to cost? Who am I going to buy them from? Are they even going to exist? So I think it's a major change in overall philosophy of the county almost. And I don't say, I'm not commenting on that concept. I'm commenting on procedure and principle more than anything else.
But, Madam Chair, actually, the notice that was provided for the hearing mimics what's in your agenda, which does specifically say use credits for other than density bonuses, lot creations, such as general plan amendments that propose to increase densities and for subdivisions that meet minimum current minimum parcel sizes but are located outside urban areas. I think clearly we did provide notice that these amendments were going to look at requiring the use of credits for those two instances. And, in fact, again, as I stated before, our draft ordinance that's been available to the public for a number of months and that we've referred out to our community advisory groups did include the sections that required the use of TDCs for general plan amendments and land divisions. If at the end of your meeting today you don't wish to recommend those two sections to the Board of Supervisors, that is clearly within your authority to do. We're simply following the direction provided to the Board as part of their authorization of these amendments.
Thank you, Cammie. I think we've probably discussed this for now enough, and now we can. Do we have other questions or concerns? Mr. Murphy, did you have other questions about other things at this point? You can come back. You don't have to ask them all right now.
Yeah,
I know you're. It's hard when it's when you're. Well, you were the first one, and you were talking, so I didn't know if you had more that you wanted to talk about.
I get the right button here. Well, I guess I'm kind of concerned that we're limiting the. Program seems like it's not working real well because there's so many restrictions and limitations on it already, and now we're placing more restrictions and limitations on it. And I've heard it referred to as a defensive action, just trying to get us over to phase two. And
right, that's basically what it is.
I kind of went back and read the minutes of the board meeting and ended up listening to the board meeting section where the board referred this to staff and wanted them to come back with some recommendations, and one of them was to look at alternate uses. And I think the Blue Ribbon Committee had a whole lot of recommendations, apparently, because they couldn't agree on three or four. They came up with, like, 15 or so. And one of them was to look at alternate uses, strategy, including general plan amendments. And then I think the final one referred to Exhibit F. And within Exhibit F, there was another list of, like, 10 or 15 items. And one of those was using TDCs for subdivision and tract map proposals. But the whole concept of the original, I thought of this, was to try and get rid of antiquated subdivisions, protect sensitive areas and agricultural areas. I don't know how many of those even exist inside of urban or rural reserve lines. Most of these sites, I think, that we're trying to be protected probably would not be an urban reserve line because the purpose of an urban reserve line is to protect those areas in the first place and not allow development into those. I'm just thinking my area like Black Lake and some of the urban reserve lines we got, the purpose is to keep people from building in sensitive areas or developing ag ground or whatever. So I kind of understand what they're trying to do here, but I think make it more restrictive probably we could do it, but I don't think the program's going to flourish under it. I think we need to move ahead to phase two and look at the broader picture and try and come back with a more workable program. So
right.
That's probably my final comment for the moment.
Okay. So what I'm understanding, what we'll need to what you'll need to decide is whether or not you can support these interim steps. Certainly, we all, I think, understand that phase two, the major changes really do need to happen, but that's not obviously what we're here to talk about today. But we'll let you think about that while we move on to some other comments or discussion. Mr. Irving, you are next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I need to revisit what Ms. Griffin was saying about the issue of when credits are no longer available. You were discussing that well, there was a potential of credits coming, but we could still end up in a situation where there are no credits available, and or else the cost of them becomes unbearable. So I believe it was Mr. Greening suggested that language could be modified to say if available at that time. And I, do you have any further discussion on that point?
The reason for the exception that's at the top of your page 316, or for Mr. O'Grady, 22.24.070B3, was to allow the out where either no credits exist today. We do have areas of the county. You can only use credits within certain areas of the county that are tied geographically. So there's a North County area or parcel maps that is the Subdivision Review Board.
I think, oh, sorry. I'm having just one little technical question here. I'm getting confused about what you're referring to because I see on this page, are you doing the same thing, Mr. O'Grady?
I did.
But where am I getting lost?
It's.
I still can't really even figure out what you're talking. I mean, I see that down here, but I don't. This is supposed to be 070 also. And are we?
It's,
oh.
Not, it's not on there.
316 is not in those pages.
Okay.
Here you can, if you want
to
look.
Oh, okay. It goes from 316 to 315 to 317 on these. All right.
I got.
Yeah, okay.
Step on that too.
That's where I'm having a problem. Sorry. Okay, just so I know.
All right.
Thank you. Mr. Irving, did you have any more questions at this time? Okay, Mr. Topping?
Yeah, I had a couple questions and then I just some thoughts.
Microphone, thank you.
you're going to need
get
a
it.
Reminder.
Yeah, a couple more times and I'll have it. First of all, this is inland only, right? And
right.
So Cambria has its own ordinance. Mm-hmm. Okay, and where is that situated in Title 23? Okay, the South Atascadero map that you showed us had a bunch of little numbers attached to lots. I just wondered if you could show that again. Can you explain briefly what we're looking at there?
Karen Nolan, I used the map we used when we went through the South Atascadero community plan. So let me get that from current slide. Yeah, it shows the acreages of the different parcels.
Okay.
So the dark red is 6 acres or higher. It's a little hard to read. Then the red is 5 to 6 acres.
Okay, and so these are acreages and this. But these are also prospective sending sites under the community-based program, right? Is that?
Prospective receiving sites.
Receiving sites.
Correct.
Ah, okay. All right. Just a comment. It seems to me like this is a holding action that we're being asked to take today. It's like that when they talk about a definition of a project, you start with enthusiasm and then you go to disillusionment, and you've got the six stages, which I won't go through right now. But ultimately, somebody comes to panic and then search for the guilty, et cetera, punishment of the innocent, and praise and honors to the uninvolved. Well, I'm not sure where we are in that sequence, but I think it's somewhere in the question, in the need. We're in a need to create some controls right now for what turned out not to be what was expected. It's the intentions versus outcomes issue, and we haven't really talked about what the potential is for TDC in a big picture sense, and there's no time for that, and I understand there's no money for that, but at the present time. But there's still a hope that TDC could be used beneficially, particularly with regard to antiquated subdivisions and even things like natural hazards, sites where you prefer not to see stuff develop. But that's all out there in the future. So it just strikes me that what we're being asked to do is basically to kind of create an interim approach that, where there'll be less confusion about outcomes. In other words, it defines outcomes very directly and clearly, and it's a holding action for the future. It's just a comment because I think the language on the first section 2222, it looks like it's really basically a cross reference. And largely intended to keep us focused on what the limitations are on this whole program for now. Have I got that more or less?
Well, I would agree with you that I do. I think that the concerns that have been raised by other members of the commission, and certainly were raised in the staff report and by the Blue Ribbon Committee, are totally valid. But we're not really here to redo the TDC program. We're here just to make some interim changes as directed by the board that hopefully will help move the program at least into being a little more clear and a little less onerous.
Receiving sites and using credits. And I wondered, Commissioner Murphy, if you thought, given that information, if you thought that in further consideration that perhaps does get the job done. And get us in the right church, at least, if not a particular pew. But anyway, I was interested in you taking a second look at that and what your thoughts are.
Oh, wrong button. Yellow one.
Yeah, I mean, if the noticing idle, I'm not an expert on what it should or shouldn't say. I just think that the fact that we're giving a notice addressing 2224, and in my mind, the whole concept of using TDCs for subdivisions and tracts and general plan amendments isn't an issue for 2224. It's for, I don't know what the other, it may be an issue for three or four other sections. It's a very major change in the subdivision or division rules and ordinances for our county. So I don't think it really belongs in that section. I think it should be over maybe in the 2222 or wherever, and when you read that section, it should refer you then to, if you're going to use TDCs, go to the TDC section and read about how to use that program, what qualifies and what doesn't. But the requirement to use that program, I don't think should be in the program. I think it should appear in other sections of our ordinances in order to... It just seems like that is where it should be. I don't think you should have to hunt it down, so to speak. It's really addressing, that change is addressing what you have to do if you want to do a tract map or a general plan or a subdivision. It's not addressing how the TDC program works in itself. So, I feel it's in the wrong, we're trying to amend the wrong section of our ordinance. It should be a whole separate issue And it's a bigger discussion than TDCs in my mind. That, again, I think it's a – I was trying to figure out the right word, a seismic change. I mean, it's a – to me, it's a huge – I'm from a rural area. I don't know everybody's quite who represents what exactly at this point. But in Napomo, there's a large number of splittable lots out there that are not are in the urban reserve line. And you're saying you'll have to get a TDC, and who, where can you get it from? You can only get it from a community-based organization run by a nonprofit group who's not controlled by the county. You're putting it at the mercy of whoever. I don't know who runs. I guess the Land Conservancy maybe runs one in our area, so you have to go to them and negotiate to purchase the credits, which may or may not be available at whatever price you can negotiate with them. To me, that's a big change versus coming in and applying for a tract map and having to go to the Planning Commission. So I still feel we're talking about a major, major issue within a TDC issue that should be addressed separately and heard separately, and we were talking about amending a lot of the code. I may not that familiar, but I don't get my point across. To me, it's a big, big deal, that Section 3. I don't think that it belongs in TDCs. I think it belongs somewhere else in the land use ordinances, and I think it needs to be properly heard. Again, I don't know that there's virtually nobody here to talk, very few people here to talk about it, like that, because the public generally didn't realize what was contained within there. Even though if you did read the staff report, it clearly says here's what the staff is recommending as a change in the language. So there's no doubt about that. But I just don't think, I really don't think the staff should have put the language in there in the first place, I guess, is my conclusion. It should be somewhere else if we want to make that kind of change. And I know it was generated by the Blue Ribbon Committee, and even I think, although when I listened to the Board of Supervisors, they never, not one of them actually directly ever spoke about this concept. There was people saying, I support the staff recommendations, but nobody specifically, when I only listened to it once, actually brought up this concept in that meeting, which I thought was interesting. And the subdivision, the Blue Ribbon Committee, it was in Schedule F, which was an exhibit to their recommendations. The last recommendation says other items you might consider are contained in Schedule F, and then it had this list of items. The GP change was part of their main and was actually in bold type, saying maybe on a general plan, and so that's going over into discussion, a whole separate issue. But I can see the concept there. Yeah, general plan is going to create a higher density, a parcel map and a subdivision map where it's already within the ordinance. It's not really increasing density. It's just doing the split that was already contemplated when that property was zoned.
Okay.
Probably said enough on that. I'm of the opinion. I mean, if I was, you know, I'm jumping ahead, I would not vote in favor of a motion containing item 3 on here, I guess, at this point, based on those reasons.
But you would vote for a motion containing item 3 if it were in 22.
No, I think I said it before. I'm not really addressing the issue or concept right now. I think it needs to be addressed separately in a separate hearing and separate study done on it.
So you have two concerns.
I have two concerns.
Not only where it is,
procedural concern.
That the changes that were basically what I thought we were discussing today were fine with everybody, or either that or they've all died of boredom. But the other thing, going back to the issue of credits again, as I'm reading through this paragraph 3 exceptions, I still would like to see some language in there that said something to the effect that the reviewing authority found that if credits were available, it's just not clear enough for me, Ms. Griffin, that the language there allows that reviewing authority to not require credits. I'd like it a little plainer language. It says that if retirement credits are unnecessary due to a specific circumstance, okay, well, specific circumstance is credits aren't available, but then it says applicable only to the subject site. Can we do some wordsmithing in there that just, so if they aren't available, if the new 88 credits or whatever might come along, haven't been processed yet. I don't want to see somebody get hung up just because we haven't given them some flexibility there. Thank you.
I know, Mr. Toppin, you have your light on, and so does planning staff. Do you want to let planning staff go first? Planning staff.
I just wanted to point out a couple of items. If your commission wants to recommend something different than the language that's in front of you today to the Board of Supervisors, that's clearly within your purview. You can recommend that item or section 22.24.070B2 be struck, and that would be your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Again, staff is bringing forward what the direction was from the Board of Supervisors as part of the authorization, and it is a significant change. As Karen said in her staff presentation, requiring the retirement of credits for conforming subdivisions in rural areas is a significant change. And could be viewed by some, as you heard from Ms. Kirk, as punitive, making it more difficult to develop in the rural areas versus making it more easy to develop in the urban and village areas where our strategic growth policies say development ought to occur. So clearly that's within your purview to do so. Speaking to the exception language, we could add language to that B1 that says, for example, where credits are not available within the limits of the source of credits as set forth in section 22.24.080. And that's section 22.24.080. That's where it says you can only use credits in the area that, you know, it limits you where you can use your credits from. And that way you have a specific example there of saying, hey, if they're not there, they're not there, and hey, review authority, you can waive it.
Okay. All right. Mr. Topping, did you have?
I was wondering, yes, I can see the need for the 22.24.070B2. And what I see here on this proposed additional language is a cross-reference to that, and would it help if the second bullet were removed from 22.22.020D? Because that only talks about what subject of the section of reference 22.24.070B2 says.
Actually, that'd be a great idea. The second part was put in for information purposes only. Yeah. I think just having the section reference is a really good idea.
For the record, I'll say it again. My question is, couldn't we take away the second bullet, which refers to the content of 22.24.070B2 and use only the first bullet, which would be a cross-reference, because you're not really changing anything. If the commission were to agree that 22.24.070B2 is, if the commission supports that, then this only simply draws, this is a flag for the counter people. Say, by the way, be sure you check this other. And that's all it is. And then my other comment is that I would hope that when we address ordinance amendments that we're not so bound by legal rules that there isn't some latitude. I mean, it seems to me the advertising language is normally fairly...
is excellent, because it just makes this a reference to the other section, and so that helps me to support... staff's recommendations here.
And with that, I want to, Cammie, could you talk about again your kind of suggested language addressing Mr. Irving's concern about and Mr. Greening's concern about, and I think Ms. Kirk's concern about the what if there are no TDC credits left? You did give us an example of where some language might work, but I didn't get it.
Okay. So under that subsection 3B, that's exception. Are you
right,
there?
Right.
Okay. One, where it says retirement of credits is unnecessary due to a specific circumstance. Before the or, you would say, for example, where credits are not available within the areas defined in 22.24.080.
Okay.
22.24.080. Okay. Does that address your concern, Mr. Irving?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, can we talk about that for just a second?
Sure.
I hate to keep being the fly in the ointment over here, but I just wanted to make sure I understood how these exceptions work. When you look at exception three, well, generally the exceptions here are in paragraph three. It looks to me like you only get to B if you satisfy A. So 3A says, where credits are required by planning area standards, additional credits shall not be required pursuant to B1 or B2, and it presumes the word if, I think, or where the review authority makes one of these findings below. But isn't it true that there might be situations where it's not actually the planning area standard that's requiring credits, that the credit would be required, for example, by virtue of this ordinance if you were just doing a land division, in the land division example?
I think our idea was that three only applies where you're in all circumstances going to be required to retire credits, which is in the general plan and the land division. So it isn't the standard use of credits to get the density bonus.
My question is, under the language, the way it's written now, if the reason that you're required to retire a transferable development credit is not because of a planning area standard, but it's because of some other requirement, for example, the requirement in B2 that transfer of development credit shall be required to be retired for each land division, does the exception apply to you? Because it looks like it's limited with that intro phrase.
It's the only time the exception it would apply to you. And to be perfectly honest, 3A was written to recognize that there are existing planning area standards out there that were established either when old general plan amendments were done and the board at that time chose to require credits, or a couple of other places where the board, as part of a decision on some kind of action, required credits to be established through planning area standards. It's probably now not necessary because we added the language in stating that where credits were going to be retired because you were asking for a general plan amendment to increase density, you would do so through planning area standards. So actually, I think now A needs to go away entirely.
Well, you at least need the part that describes when the findings in B need to be made. So I would think at a minimum you need a sentence that says additional credits credits shall not be required pursuant to B1 or 2
where
the review authority makes all these findings, right?
Yes. So the latter part of...
So it opens up the exception to situations
right
beyond that where a planning area standard is requiring you to retire these credits.
So it says something like credit should not be required pursuant to B1 or 2?
Yeah. Credits shall not be required pursuant to subsection B1 or B2 where the review authority first finds that.
And that could all be in A. It doesn't need to be in an A.
Right. It'd just be A.
Okay. That makes sense. I think heaven's you're here, Ramona, and those television cameras are going because I'm bad at words
right
off the top. Okay. Where?
When you write an ordinance, you try and think of every circumstance that might happen, and that's why it's better when we have eight heads in the room versus the two.
Eight heads. Okay. okay, I think we've addressed that concern.
I'll try and go through all the changes. If Karen, you can follow along and yell if I've missed one. So the first change is adding the reference to 2224 in section 2222.020D that's written on the first page of the information that was handed to your commission today, minus the second bullet.
Okay.
The second change is to add to 2224070 under the introductory paragraph, another paragraph that notes that where you're in the South County planning area or the South Atascadero area, you go to another section, different sections for your requirements. Language added to B of that same section that states that credits retired in accordance with this section follow the rules of 2224090 and happen at the time of subdivision recordation. Language to B1 of that same section that would be an addition to the first sentence after allowed that would say through establishment of planning area standards.
Kimmy, there's also a heading change on that page, 3-15, just adding transfer development credits required.
Thank you.
Ms. Griffin, is this the language planning area standards? Is that the same as community-based TDC program area?
No, planning area standards are contained in our Article 9.
But so it is intended planning area standards.
Right.
Language there. Okay.
And then a change to that same section, B3. It would be a change to B3 that would do away with A, make B a new A, and it would read, credits shall not be required pursuant to subsections B1 or B2 where the review authority first finds that. Change to the language in that same section under sub 1 that would be a continuation of the sentence before or to say, for example, where credits are not available within the areas defined in section 22.24.080. And there is also a new section title or an addition to the section title of 22.24.090 to add and retiring development credits, and then additional language in that introductory paragraph of that same section. And that's all I have. Did I miss any, Karen?
Very good.
Wow, okay. That's all I had, too. Do we have any other suggestions, changes? Do we have a motion? Mr. O'Grady? Mr. Experience?
I'll give it a shot. Okay. I move to, 1, adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code, Section 21000 et sequitur. I guess that's what the Latin means. And number 2, approve land use ordinance amendment, LRP 2008-00012, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A. The ordinance amendment I just referred to shall be as revised in accordance with the previous language from Assistant Director Griffin.
Second.
Second?
Oh, I already seconded it.
Oh,
that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you.
I waited, but you were turning on your light. I'm being impatient. I'm sorry. Do we have any other discussion? I know, Mr. Murphy, you might want to say.
I guess so. Might as well weigh in for a final time.
You might as well.
And I don't support the current motion as it's written because I still feel recommendation number 3 should be somewhere else in our planning use ordinance and not in the TDC section. And I don't think that it was given adequate and fair public hearing based on the effect that change in the planning ordinance is going to have on the residents of the county. So.
Okay. With that, Ramona, do you want to go ahead and call the roll?
Madam Chair, can I just make one comment about the motion? The motion maker read from the staff recommendation about the environmental document, but I wanted to make it clear the Planning Commission is recommending that the Board of Supervisors adopt the negative declaration. The Planning Commission is not adopting the negative declaration itself. And just as I wanted to make sure that they understood that was the motion.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
TDCs are extremely complicated and have had a long history here of problems. So hopefully this is a move towards some improvement, and we'll get to the big stuff, like you say, Commissioner O'Grady, long after all of us have moved on. Yeah, well, the good stuff. Okay, so before I call the meeting to adjournment, I believe Ms. Carroll is going to come back and talk to us about our site visit.
And I was going to kill time until she could get here, but she managed to walk in just in time.
There we go.
You finished a little faster than I thought. Thank you. I just to follow up on the site visit out to the solar projects in the Carrizo Plain, we'd like to set up that field trip for you on February 2nd, if that is going to be an acceptable date to all the commissioners.
Yep.
And so if it is that going to work for everybody?
I think so.
I see everybody's heads shaking up and down, which is yes. So then we will just go ahead and set that up. We will do the proper notice. We will make all the arrangements and the particulars, and that will be a day that will be a field trip for you all.
Okay, can I just clarify that we think we're going to be going to both sites?
We will be going to both sites,
and
yes.
And do you expect that meeting to start at 9 like our meetings normally do, or do you have an idea yet?
I don't have an idea yet. I don't think it'll start any later than 9. Okay. I think 9 would probably be appropriate.
Yeah, because it seems to me if we go at 9, we should be back here by 5.
Right.
I would say.
Right.
Hopefully easily.
We think 7-ish hours, could be a little less, could be a little bit more.
Okay.
But you know, sort of just depends on how much discussion there is. But we will set up an itinerary and be very and set it up so that we'll go into certain spots, and then of course we'll have the hearing, the first hearing on the projects on the SunPower project on the 27th.
Right.
So we will have plenty of time for questions on that date.
Okay, so. Thank you.
So you'll let us know the logistics of where we meet at
right.
what time and
right.
in an email or something.
Right. We'll
okay.
just put a memo together.
Yeah, just
as soon as we know that, we will send that information to you.
Got it.
And just for the new commissioners and the way just it's worked usually is we meet out like the flagpole or some other place. We call the meeting to order. We take a roll. I think we usually skip the flag salute and we go along, and then we get into our buses and go. And you know, we don't talk about the project at the buses, and then the members of the public who can fit into the bus come with us, and then along with any staff people, and then those members of the public who wants to follow the transportation do that too.
Right, and we will have an itinerary so that if there are members of the public that want to follow, they can follow along with the location and the itinerary.
I do have a couple questions about that, because I was thinking, well, it's North County. I would just go straight out from Pass Roll. So it would be a requirement to come here to convene the
right,
the meeting
as an official,
and then turn around and go back out there. Okay.
I believe that's true.
We can't have the meeting out there. One other question would be rain cancels. Rain does not cancel.
It's California. It doesn't rain.
You know,
it does rain in California Valley.
We'll put that to. We need to think about that a little bit. Probably a little bit of rain wouldn't cancel. If it was a huge, horrendous storm, then I think it would cancel.
Okay. Thank you.
Those are good questions. Thank you. And with that, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting adjourned.
Madam Chair.
Oh, wait.
Can we take a motion for
No, we're not going to call it adjourned. I didn't do my thing. I remember. We have to do that part. Okay, so what do I have to do?
A motion for correspondence, please.
Okay, we need a motion to take all correspondence and testimony into the record.
So moved.
Somebody say second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good. And then we have to,
adjourned to January 27th.
Okay, we're adjourned to January 27th, our next regular meeting. Now, I love my gavel.